It's Open Call with Eric and Chris.
That's me.
It's a show that you'll never want to miss. It's Open Call.
It's Open Call. I'm Chris Grace.
And I'm Eric Michaud.
And it's Wednesday, February 19th, 2020.
Yeah, welcome to the new year.
We had a little bit of a break.
Mm-hmm.
An unplanned break.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a medical issue.
Mm-hmm. If you're on his Facebook, you would have seen this already, but do you want to kind of jump into it?
Yeah, if you're not on my Facebook, get on my Facebook. Facebook's so good for people. I think everyone should be on it more often.
There's like no politics on there. Everybody's getting along.
It's about 3 weeks now. 3 weeks ago, I had an onset of Bell's palsy, which is a paralysis of the right side of my face. And it's damaged to the cranial nerve number 7, which controls a lot of facial expression and your ability to speak. So, I was able to talk, but, I was self-conscious about it, but also very tiring to talk on some other podcasts.
It's Open Call with Eric and Chris.
That's me.
It's a show that you'll never want to miss. It's Open Call.
There has been Peter versus C, but
we just haven't seen it.
Yeah, but right now it's a little, partially it's because I don't think either of us had a strong interest in seeing The Last Ship.
No.
At the Amundsen. And then Frozen was on a really long run.
Mm-hmm.
Which we already talked about.
Right.
The next show in the Amundsen is Book of Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
So
your favorite.
Yeah. So the next thing we're probably going to talk about is
Margaritaville.
Margaritaville and I don't know what else is coming in. I have tickets to see SpongeBob again.
I'd be interested in seeing it simply because I want to see what they do with the set.
Right.
How they handle all the stuff that happened in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think they've done some tweaks to the script and score.
There's not enough tweaks in the world for that show to be one that would be for me. I'll say it like that. Anyway, if you've had Bell's palsy or if in the future you have it, feel free to hit me up to ask about it because, it's in the grand scheme of things, relatively minor thing to happen, but it's also in the moment. There's not many conditions that are like this where when you have them, they're really, really debilitating
and noticeable.
But then in the grand scheme of things are kind of minor because people tend to recover from them within a month to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So right now I'm about 85% recovered.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point now, I can notice it more than other people, that there's still things that I can't do with the side of my face.
Right. We should also mention that in that time period, you also got booked on an episode of Superstore and an episode of Stumptown. So that added to your stress levels as far as my face isn't working and I'm going to be on TV.
Right. You know, for most people, you can go to your job and you'd be uncomfortable and people would stare at you and make fun of you, as I'm sure all your friends at work do.
No, they do.
But you could do your job if my job was still being a web developer, I could still do my job.
Right.
And in this case, my job involves my face. So I believe the day that I shot Stumptown was like 13 days after I first got diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some, even 3 days before, I was like, I might have to cancel this. And mm-hmm. then I felt enough recovery to perform my job. And also it worked out that I had very, very small parts on both of those episodes. I'm literally saying one word.
Right.
They both were parts of the joke was that I was not particularly expressive
right.
in those parts. So it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're back. And sometime the next week we might see a show because we might go see Ragtime
mm-hmm.
at Musical Theater West. Also, a friend of mine is directing a MFA thesis at UC San Diego. Orestes 2.0 is what it's called.
Interesting.
So I might go see that. I didn't know this, but if you go to an MFA program at UC San Diego, you get to use the facilities for La Jolla.
Oh, that's great.
So that's a great but which is a great theater.
Mm-hmm.
And the theaters and facilities there are pretty incredible. So that's quite a luxury if you are looking for a college to go to, maybe UCSD.
You know, you did see a show recently.
What show did I see?
You saw OK Boomer.
Oh, sure. I saw OK Boomer at the Quick and Funny Musicals at UCB. Actually, there's a, I thought I enjoyed that show a lot. And it's Eric is in it. He's playing, what's your character's name?
Chuck. I'm a 70-year-old, very grumpy man.
This is a retelling of Romeo and Juliet, but instead of two houses of Montague and Capulet, it's, is it millennials?
Millennials and
versus
and
boomers.
Yeah. And it all takes place in a retirement home called Verona Retirement Community.
But it will be back next Thursday if you guys want to see the second time around of this show.
That's the 27th at UCB Sunset at 8:30.
At 8:30.
And then, I just real quick, the 29th and 30th, I'm appearing at the Rockwell in a musical called Dear Jerry Seinfeld. I'm playing Newman, which has had a run. I'm actually the third actor playing Newman, so it's been running for a while in various locations. But tickets are available if you want to come check that out.
Is it only two nights?
Yeah, just the 28th and 29th.
Why did I think it was...
They originally thought that we had a March 1st performance, but we don't.
Oh, okay. So it's only the... It's performing like in rep or something with The Bachelor?
With The Bachelor, the
musical. Oh, I didn't know that. So that's Richelle Meese's show, The Bachelor Musical, which is also quite fun.
Is Ashley involved in that?
Ashley directed... our friend Ashley Ward directed a... maybe the first one or an early version of it at UCB. I'm just double checking. Yeah, the 28th and 29th, and they are dark on the March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, guys, this is a leap year.
It is.
So there's a February 29th.
With that whole extra day, you can come see The Bachelor and Dear Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah, and not feel like you've gotten lost lost a day.
Right.
Just to donate a whole day to theater. Trying to look up. Oh, it's at 8 p.m. on those nights. Rockwell's on Vermont Avenue. If you live outside of L.A., just remember it's on Vermont Avenue. since we didn't really have a theater show to talk about, or live theater show to talk about. Oh, actually, did want to say one quick thing, is that yesterday, or like late last night, I got a Facebook ad, and I ended up getting a trial subscription to a thing called Marquee. .tv.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bringing this up because we're about to talk about some other TV streaming stuff that we've watched. This is trying to be sort of like Broadway HD, but for it's funny, the ad was for dance. Like, we've got a lot of contemporary dance stuff. And they do have theater. And I just wanted to mention for people listening to this podcast, Marquee.tv's theater selection is very small.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I will probably, unless I find some stuff that really wows me on it, because Broadway HDs is kind of small, but this makes Broadway HD look like Netflix.
Wow.
It's basically only Royal Shakespeare Company stuff.
Oh.
And it's all like classics. So there's just very, very little stuff. So if you encounter it, Marquee.tv, in my opinion, but there's a 14-day trial, but in my opinion, it's not great for watching theater.
You might be able to watch everything you want to watch within that 14-day
trial. Yeah, I might be able to, yeah. But we were going to talk today about something on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm. So we just got the new the Disney Plus subscription, which is really fun. It's got a lot of interesting stuff, but some of their original content includes a television show called Encore, which is hosted and produced by Kristen Bell. Which, if you're listening to this, you probably know what it is. But just to kind of recap what it is, basically, several years after the fact, they are reuniting high school theater departments to perform the musical that they performed, you know, however many years ago it was. So, like, if you were in Pippin in 1982, guess what? You're doing Pippin again now with most of the same cast or a lot of the same members. Obviously, they're much older. You know, it was a high school, so it's not necessarily they were great performers at the time or are now. And many of them have not seen each other since then. So it's kind of a reunion of sorts. There's a lot of tears. There's a lot of heart. And I will say the show kind of pulled a 180 on me. It kind of tricked me because the first couple of episodes, I was like, oh my God, it's like a weekly real version of Waiting for Guffman. Like every single week, it's just cringeworthy and funny, and you want to laugh at these people's pain. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere around the middle, it turned for me, and I'm suddenly really invested and caring about these people and rooting for them. And it's interesting that it even melted my cold, cynical, dark heart.
Yeah, it didn't melt mine, but actually, that is kind of what Waiting for Guffman is, actually.
Yeah.
Because Waiting for Guffman is similar in that you end up, they feel like human beings by the end of it. I actually think it's worth telling people about this show because it's definitely one of my favorite shows from 2019. And I actually know a lot of people that are into theater who have not watched this show.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe everybody knows what the premise is, but a lot of people are not checking this show out for various reasons. And some are like when Ozzy Osbourne said that he couldn't watch This Is Spinal Tap because to everybody else, it was a comedy and to him, it was a tragedy. Like it felt too personal. All the things that happened to them in Spinal Tap, Ozzy Osbourne, it was connected to too much pain. I've actually heard like at least two people say that they didn't want to watch Encore because of that. Mm. Like they didn't want to, you know, it kind of depends on if you, from the Waiting for Guffman perspective that you were talking about, if you enjoy watching the episodes of American Idol when the people are really bad, then you'll enjoy that aspect of the show because mm-hmm. that definitely comes up. And then there are some, I mean, I don't think I found it as heartwarming as you, mm-hmm. but there is a lot to be said for like, you know, the community and the friendships and the connections that the people are reestablishing.
Mm-hmm. For me, definitely that aspect of it was very heartwarming to me. But for me, the thing that really kind of got me was so many of them were talking about, like, if I could just go back in time and tell myself then to trust myself, to believe in myself more. I really miss this. You see a lot of people who are kind of at that point in their lives where they're like, I made a wrong choice. I went down the wrong path.
Yeah.
And whether or not that's actually true.
Yeah, the vast majority of them, it's like, you made the right choice.
You made the right choice by not following this.
Yeah.
But there are some of them that, you know, you really see the pain in them. And like, there was the one, he played the...
Well, wait, let's, like, we should talk about whether we're going to talk about specifics of the episodes or, you know what I mean? So, like, if you have not watched Encore yet, we both highly recommend that you do,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think we should talk about, or you should jump out of this episode if you are worried about specifics of that kind of thing.
That makes sense, yeah. Come back and listen to this after you've watched the series.
Yeah, it's definitely worth watching.
Because there is stuff I really want to talk about.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, and if you have watched it, then listen in to the rest of this episode.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Jumping in.
What were you going to say? There's...
Well, I was talking about the gentleman who played Captain Von Trapp in the Sound of Music episode.
Uh-huh.
He's the one that kind of dropped out of school and went into the military and never kind of looked back. And he kind of disappeared out of all their lives. And then...
This one has... He looks strange. He looks like he's...
He's kind of a Chelsea boy.
Like he has his eyebrows threaded or something.
Yeah. But like... And seeing him just kind of, because he's good, like he's got a good voice. He's you know, if he had continued training mm-hmm. and taken it seriously, he might have had a good regional career or something. But you could just see the pain in him of like, I really love this and I forgot how much I missed this. Mm-hmm. And a 17-year-old kid made a bad decision or made a decision that he thought was the right decision. And it took me down this entirely different path. That took me away from this thing that makes me really happy. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of that makes me sad because I remember, especially for me, when I took that kind of 7 or 8 year break from performing, I felt that way. I felt that way all the time of just being like, this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. And yes, I'm good at this. And yes, I can enjoy this and I can make the best of this, but this isn't what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm missing a huge piece of something that brought me so much joy mm-hmm. in my life, in my younger life. And I remember saying to a lot of my friends or saying about some of my friends who had met me after or during that break that I always kind of felt like those people didn't necessarily know all of me because I wasn't performing and they didn't know that part of me and they never saw me on stage. So it's like you're not seeing all of me.
Mm-hmm.
What I present in my day-to-day life is not necessarily what you see come out of me on stage. Mm-hmm. So I related a lot to mm-hmm. that aspect of the show for him.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been successful your entire life, so you have no idea what that feels like.
Yeah, I can't really relate to what people pursue. I do think that like I never had a period where I was like gave up on any of the things I wanted to pursue. Mm-hmm. And because also I'm very aware of when you sit out from something for a while, I think this is particularly dangerous if you really want to be an artist. But when people, and I think that there's a similar story that happens a lot, is people go to New York and then they are, there's a period where they like leave. And often they say like, well, I'm just going to move home and save up some money, or, you know, I'll be back there in a couple of years, blah, blah, blah. And the vast majority of those people never make it back. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a danger in removing yourself from the daily grind of trying to be one of those artists, and a combination of your self perception of how great the projects that you worked on or how good you were in them goes higher and higher, and your rustiness at being a performer goes higher and higher at the same time. So what happens is, like, we probably know a lot of people that did musical theater at a certain point and then now haven't done it in 5 or 10 years, but have extremely opinionated criticisms of people on Broadway that are like in between being like a complete fan and being a professional, somewhere like it's like you know just enough to be critical of people in a way that, like, if you threw those people into a musical the next day, they'd be like, oh, there's a lot of muscle memory of how to do this that I don't have anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think that's very much in Encore. People who have these expectations of how good they're supposed to be based on how they were in high school, mm-hmm. but they have literally not performed for 15, 20 years. And then they hear their own voices come out of their mouth and like, oh, I was better back then or whatever.
Right.
You know, I just think that's a fascinating thing to me. Mm-hmm. It's an examination on so many levels at so many different, the basic story of like, I wanted to be a performer, but I'm not. Which is true for most of them. There's a handful of them that are still performers. Mm-hmm. But for most of them, it's like, I wanted to be a performer, but I'm not today. That story is examined in dozens of different ways, and they're pretty much all interesting.
Yeah, and they're all different. There's a lot of different variations. You know, some of them are like, oh, well, you know, something happened with my family or whatever. You're like, there are personal reasons that they can't go on. And then there are some who are just like, I didn't have the confidence, or, you know, the woman who played Annie in the first episode talked about how she moved to New York and she was supposed to be this big, like, I was going to be on Broadway and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then it just never panned out and she kind of gave up. But like, there are others who were like, well, I was supposed to, and then this happened and I couldn't, you know, like there's different variations of the same kind of story, but they're all interesting.
Yeah. Well, and you know that my pet peeve is people saying that they should supposed to be on Broadway at some point.
you can't see facial expressions, but if you could see the facial expression I'm making.
Well, right, because now, I think that these people carry this expectation of like, I think that's a dangerous part of them not pursuing it as well. Of them being like, everyone in high school said I was going to end up on Broadway. Mm-hmm. This expectation of I was destined somehow to be on Broadway and fate or whatever sidelined that dream. And, you know, a lot of times I feel like it's like, you know, like maybe those people should have just stayed in New York an extra year. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like I feel like sometimes that the expectation became such a burden to them or something that, you know, it's like the real, it's like if I came out to LA and I was like, well, I should be on TV by a certain point. There's no way to calculate the arc of how you're supposed to achieve the thing, especially in the arts. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were in medical school and you were like, well, I'm in this program for, years, and then I'm going to be an intern, and then like there's a prescribed path that most doctors take. Mm-hmm. And then you could say like, well, now I'm behind. I shouldn't be where I've been, or I'm a lawyer and I want to be a lawyer. I didn't pass the bar exam or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like being an artist is so subjective, and all the paths into it are so individual. And somebody giving you advice, like if I was to try to give someone advice how to get into TV now, I'd be giving them advice on about how to get into TV in 2016 and 17. Mm-hmm. And it's already different. Mm-hmm. And it was different from that from 2012. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's just that for someone like me, who doesn't like the idea of being like, well, the feeling that some of them have of the entitlement of they should have been on Broadway by a certain point, that comes up a lot in the show. Like I'd say every single episode it comes up.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I think that because I've done that before, I'm certainly guilty of that, of like, I should have by now, I was supposed to have, I would have been all these other things. And I think that becomes a crutch, but also a roadblock. Like you can lean on and it gives you comfort to say like, well, if this hadn't happened, I would have done this.
Yeah.
And, but it also kind of stops you and like, well, because of that, I can't do that now. Yeah. So it really, it's limiting in two different ways because you're leaning on it, but also it's stopping you.
Yeah. If in any way that belief was something that helped people, like if they were like, I should have been on Broadway, so I'm moving back to Broadway. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go on an audition, two auditions every week until the destiny of me being on Broadway becomes true. Mm-hmm. Then that's fine. But I'd say for the most, that's generally not a belief that, I forgot what the name is, for beliefs that are like a limiting belief or something. Mm. A belief that actually keeps you stuck as opposed to like putting you in action. I mean, sometimes.
It's called faith. It's religion.
Sometimes, yeah. That's like the Arrested Development, the band, had a song that was in the song they were like, the word hope and the word change are directly opposite, not the same. There's the lyric was something about like, if you pray for change, then you're like just hoping that it happens as opposed to actually doing it.
You need to be active in making it happen.
Now, I will say that some people are destined to be the lead of a show, and then they go through the worst possible tragedy that could happen to any book performer that would clearly derail your entire life and career, which is being hit in the face with a softball.
I was really hoping that's where you were going. I was really hoping that's where you were going.
Everybody was just like, look, some people get cancer. Some people, have a family or someone breaks up with them, some personal tragedy. But that's nothing compared to being hit in the face with a softball.
The way she talked, this is from the High School Musical episode.
Yes. By the way, they're what, 26 or something?
The show was in 2007, I believe. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, they're in their late 20s.
I think that episode, people will probably agree that you feel the least empathy for them because you're just like, you're not even, you have no, you can't say your life is over. Like you didn't, you could start now.
Yeah. You're like maybe 30.
Yeah.
Calm down. But the way she talked about it,
yeah,
it was like the world, like she has no visible scars. She's a very attractive woman.
Yeah.
Like you can't tell anything happened to her. So it's like, yeah, you didn't get to be the lead in your senior musical.
Yeah.
And you missed like half of your senior year of high school. And I'm sure that sucked.
Yeah.
But also it's been 13 years. It's time to let it go.
And everybody else talked about it the same way.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe,
I heard the ambulance and I knew in my stomach.
I just really hope that she gets the chance to play the part. And I'm the one who played the part, but I'm willing to give it up to her just so she gets it. It's just like, oh, I mean, when you compare it to like the, what school was it? The African-American cast that was the oldest
group. Anything goes.
They're like, well, five of us are dead now.
Right.
There's a different level in terms of what tragedies are, I guess.
Right. Well, like her getting hit in the face with a softball, as opposed to the woman, I think it was in either the Godspell or the Anything Goes episode where the woman talked about losing her son because he had a blood transfusion and he got HIV.
Right.
Like there's a big difference between those two life events.
Yeah. Let's talk about the episodes. You have a little screenshot of the episodes.
I do. So the first episode was Annie,
uh-huh.
Which just things I want to talk about. I want to talk about the woman who was the lead.
Yeah.
And she was the one who was supposed to go to Broadway and was, and then like couldn't remember her songs, couldn't remember her lines.
Well, that's what I mean about the rustiness.
Yeah.
Is I think the, okay. So Ira Glass has a great thing, really worth watching, about amateurs or when you first try to start being good at something. It's like stand-up comedy or acting or whatever. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're somebody that cares about theater, musical theater, which everybody listening to this podcast does, and all these people do as well. So you care so much about musical theater and you have a very refined sense of taste about musical theater. And you probably think that your opinions about musical theater are more sophisticated and knowledgeable.
Which than, is true if you're me.
Yes. Than your layperson who just likes Wicked, right?
Right.
And this is all from the Ira Glass stuff. The problem is then you try to make, you try to be an actor or you try to write a musical, and your ability to create something that lives up to your taste level is, there's a big gap between what you can make and what you like. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is continuing in the art form while you close that gap, because a lot of people give up. Because they're like, oh, I don't have it. I'm not as talented as the people who made Wicked or whatever. So that's that rustiness is that – so they have not only this – she has this high standard for herself about like I should have been on Broadway. And she's got this memory of like I was so great in Annie.
Right.
And now she's – like physically your tools to sing, if they have not been practiced – they're going to be rusty
sure.
and not be as good. And so she's hearing it. And so that gap between what her expectation is, her memory of how good she was, and the current day is, you know, challenging for some people.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, completely. And I think that rustiness also comes into as far as memory. Like you just, if you're not used to learning lines or if you're not used to learning monologues or big passages of music and whatnot.
Yeah.
That's a tool. I mean, it gets rusty, and you know you find that you're not remembering choreography as fast as you used to, or remembering like I even myself. It used to be like you could show me something once choreography wise, and I could pretty much do it. Mm-hmm. And now, like it's not the same. It's just I'm rusty, and I don't remember. I don't retain as fast as I used to.
And they're compressing their rehearsal periods into like five days.
Yeah, there's that too.
When she was in high school. She probably didn't, you know, didn't have too as many concerns as somebody now who's an adult with children or whatever at a job, mm-hmm. and they probably had a month to
at
rehearse.
Least, yeah.
So yeah.
I also wanted to talk about the woman who was their drama teacher, mm-hmm. who then got put into the role of Mrs. Pugh.
Yes,
and was rehearsing her line over and over and over again,
and then messed it up.
And then I don't think she messed it up, but like she kept. She kept saying like, well, how about if I do this with it? Or how about I, like, uh-huh. It was just like, it's one line, relax. Yeah. And it's literally in the middle of a song. So you don't have time to do anything fun with it.
Yeah.
But then they kept showing her like off on the sidelines and the woman playing Annie was like messing up lyrics or whatnot. And she was singing Tomorrow and she messed up the lyrics. And the theater teacher was like, she doesn't know this song. It's just like that first episode really hooked me in the Guffman-esque style of like, really the part of me that really enjoys human misery.
The first episode I think is actually a very good, you know, I don't know what order they shot them in, but it was very, a good template for the rest of the series.
Yeah. It's a good primer.
Is Kristen Bell in the first one at the end or?
I don't think she showed up in that
one. Just to be clear, if you're watching this to see a lot of Kristen Bell, it's not the show for you.
No.
Cause she's in maybe two episodes or something like that.
She shows up in Fiddler. And then she shows up in another
one.
But mostly she just does like the tag at the beginning.
Right. And then they have a guest. Who was the lady that came in and she was like, I performed this originally. Well, what's the next episode?
Well, that actually leads right into it. Beauty and the Beast is the next episode. And Susan Egan, who was the original Belle on Broadway, showed up to kind of help coach them, which I thought was great. And I kind of hoped that would be a continuing thing. Like, oh, they're going to do Ragtime. Let's bring in Audra.
I don't think those people are hard to get. I think you get them.
Yeah. Like, I mean, especially, you know, if it's Grease, you know, you can bring in, you know, Ricky Paul Golden, who was Danny in the last revival, yeah. Or Barry Bostwick probably isn't doing a whole lot right now.
I think that almost every one of these shows, I don't think it would be hard to get a lead from a Broadway production of it to come talk to them.
Yeah.
You pay for their plane ticket and you get them a hotel. Done. And they shoot for 3 hours.
Right. They get to go, they go to one rehearsal, they show up, they make everyone's day better, and then they leave.
I mean, they brought Roger Love in like 5 times.
Right.
Vocal coach Roger Love.
Roger Love.
Who I actually have like a video of somewhere about like how to sing. He actually seemed pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He definitely was helping them for sure.
But it was just funny, like they kept bringing him out like Jillian Michaels guy? From Biggest Loser or something.
Right. So Beauty and the Beast was the second episode. Mm-hmm. And the highlight of that one for me was the woman who was playing Mrs. Potts, who very clearly felt that she should have been Belle.
Oh, yeah. Well, this starts a theme throughout. Like, this starts a thread of sentiment that I don't think we thought was going to be a thing.
Yeah.
But is a thing in later episodes well. Where Annie's like, they just bring back Annie. They do Annie.
Everyone plays their first.
The drama parts. Is like, you know, what is it like reconnecting with friends and doing this show again?
Mm-hmm.
And then, and I, you kind of think like, well, there's not going to be, okay, it's Disney. There's not going to be like backbiting, or it's not a reality show like that. And then like this starts to bring up the, because she clearly wanted to be Belle.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't like go too far with it, right? She just hoped she would be Belle.
She hoped that she would be Belle, and then when they had the auditions, because they make them all sing, you know, a song from the year they graduated high school to kind of just see, gauge where their voices are. And I thought the whole premise of the show was, like, you come back, you play the role that you played the first time.
I mean, there's no question. That definitely is the premise, but then it gets upended.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem like, well, what's the point then? If, like, we're coming back to do chess again, but I'm playing a different part. Like, it doesn't make sense.
This time you're playing the board.
Right. Ooh. So it seemed that she might have the idea in her head that, like, oh, I didn't get to play Belle the first time, but I'm going to get to play it this time.
Right.
But then doesn't again. Right. So there's definitely, and she's just so over the top, and she's a voiceover artist now, and mm-hmm. I think she lives out here, and
I think this is why it's good when they chose the order of episodes. Her feeling, if it had been later in the season, you'd just be like, oh, whatever. But like this starts a little, people heighten on this idea in later episodes.
Oh, for sure they do.
What was next?
The next one was Sound of Music, which had the guy who dropped out of school and went into the military.
Uh-huh. And he was the father?
He was Captain Von Trapp, yeah.
And also, they played multiple parts, right? They played the kids, too.
Some of the adults did, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, they bring in professionals.
Yes, they bring in, well, I guess, local professionals, probably.
Yeah.
To
they go to their local equity office, and they're like, who do you got?
Who do you got? One thing that I do wish that you had mentioned several times while watching the show, I wish that the professionals they brought in were age appropriate to the rest of the cast around them.
Yeah, they're always
like 25 and like, hey, I just, you know, just got out of college and I just graduated Tisch and I'm blah, blah, blah.
I would actually say, okay, two options. Either they should be age appropriate to the rest. The problem is that, so if you're 40 years old and you're an equity professional performer, although you get to be on TV.
Yeah.
So like you would do it.
And but it's a week of work.
It's just that like you run the, their prices go up, I'm sure.
Sure.
The other option I would say is, okay, let's say we're only going to use 23-year-olds mm-hmm. that are like they've got done one equity job. Then I know this would be expensive, but Disney has the money. Keep the same group for the whole season.
Oh,
like fly them around to all the different places. The same way that the same director is used in a lot of places.
I like that idea because then you get to see those performers. You get to know them as well.
Yeah.
And see how they adapt.
Well, because then you could do testimony from them.
Right.
To be like, these people are crazy.
Right. Like, oh my God, these people are awful.
Yeah. What was the next one?
After Sound of Music was Grease.
Yes.
Do you remember anything about that episode?
No. The early ones are blurring together a little bit for me.
The one real big takeaway from Grease was the woman who played Cha-Cha.
Oh, yes. What's her line?
I'm Cha-Cha Di Gregorio. They call me Cha-Cha because I'm the best dancer at St. Bernadette's.
Yeah,
and they just showed her saying it over and over again.
Yeah.
There was something else from the – what was – I can't remember which episode she was from. I think it was from Oklahoma where the woman – her mom was the drama teacher, and she didn't cast her as the lead. She put her, and that's like, she's clearly
Oklahoma.
The best.
That's Oklahoma. That's an art school in Georgia.
that she was clearly the best student, yeah, or best performer.
Right? Ashley Ward, who we mentioned, directed the Bachelor musical that's going to be at Rockwell, went to the high school that's like that school's rival.
Oh.
And they knew of those people. And apparently that woman's parents who ran the drama department are not the best people, which they kind of displayed in that show.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a moment because I was, yeah, we were talking about that.
Where was the Grease?
Grease was at Hackensack High School in New Jersey.
Okay.
And that was from 1990. Okay. So they're, you know, like 3 or 4 years older than me, yeah, generally. So like mid-40s. And then we get to Annie Get Your Gun.
Yeah, which is probably the best episode of the entire season. Oh,
Amy.
I understand them putting it here because it's basically the fires off the momentum for you to watch the rest of the episodes. Mm-hmm. But this one is probably the best one. This one's insane.
So there's this woman, Amy, who's an OBGYN now.
Yeah.
She shows up.
She is married.
She's married and has children. Yeah. She shows up to the first rehearsal, like in cowboy boots and a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
And is like, I'm going to play Annie Oakley this time.
She is not just hoping that she gets cast as Annie Oakley. She is
determined.
But she's not just like going to sing her song and hope that they see her. She's like, she explicitly says, I want to do this.
Right. Meanwhile, the woman who played Annie originally, who came in was like, with the idea of the premise of the show, like this, I'm just going to get to do my part again, is like, wait, what?
Yeah. Amy is clearly someone who doesn't care that much about whether or not someone is in a role that's already been filled,
mm-hmm,
because she's also married,
mm-hmm,
and there's someone in Annie Get Your Gun that she had a romantic relationship with in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what his name is.
Alfie.
And Alfie broke up with Amy.
Alfie cheated on Amy.
Oh, cheated. But
with someone, a member of the tech staff.
Okay. And she has not let this go.
No. And the role she's auditioning for is to be his love interest in the show.
Yes. And she talks a lot about how he was her first love.
Mm-hmm.
In the audition process, there's a like, you've got to make out with him. I don't know if you remember that, but mm-hmm, they like made out. And meanwhile, like, her husband's going to be at home just watching this TV show at some point.
And her kids, because she says a couple of times, like, Alfie's the one that got away. He was the true love of my life.
Yes.
And it's like, this poor woman's husband.
Yeah. Like, and one way you know that he's the one that got away is the way that she spells her name.
Yeah. She was originally born A-M-Y,
uh-huh,
and then now spells it A-M-E-I-G-H, I think.
Uh-huh.
Because he wrote her a note in school and said, oh, it would be cool and clever if you wrote your name like this. And changed it.
I think in her yearbook is where he wrote it.
Uh-huh.
And now, as an OBGYN, she's Dr. Amy whatever, and like that's her name on her medical certificate.
She's legally changed her name to reflect what he said she should
Which
do.
Which is weird because that must have happened after high school,
yeah,
the legally changing of the name.
Oh, yeah.
So
she's held on to that for that long.
Yeah. I mean, change it back.
right, exactly. Especially after that, because she comes in clearly wanting closure,
yeah,
and doesn't get it from him.
Also, she's not that great and doesn't get the part.
No.
Great episode, though. By the way, Alfie is a very good singer.
Mm-hmm.
Who, by the way, I think he might be a little crazy as well, because he on the show says that he got into Juilliard and that he hasn't been performing in a while. And then someone online was like, he didn't get into Juilliard, and he still does like a showcase show, like a Vegas style show in Florida every once in a while. So, and he runs a barbershop. So I'm not totally, you know, she is a challenging person, mm-hmm, but the idea that she's the only dysfunctional person in that is probably not true.
No, yeah. Alfie definitely seems like a bit of a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
As well. Yeah. He seems like a lot to deal with. And there, that's also the episode where the guy is like the stay-at-home dad and he's trying to get a job and he keeps leaving the
And he freaks out.
And he freaks out and quits the show and then comes back. Like,
he freaks out just because the guy is like,
you don't know your lines.
Yeah. He's like, don't call me out in front of other people. It's like, well,
that's sort of my job. So. It's sort of my job.
Yeah.
I'm just going through my little notes here. So after that one, let me just get back to my little picture here. Da-da-ba-da-da-da. So after Andy Get Your Gun was Oklahoma.
Which is one of the more talented casts, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The one that stood out for me is that, so this is a high school that had a husband and wife running the theater department. They directed Oklahoma. Their daughter was in the program, and they didn't cast her in a role. She was mm-hmm. ensemble. And now that daughter now runs the same drama department at the school. And she is great. Like, she's a great super singer talented. And good actor.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that she didn't get into the show is weird. And her husband is the assistant drama teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And he's great, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that cast is actually quite good.
Yeah.
And I believe they recast Curly. Like, cause that the husband was not Curly to begin with.
I don't believe so. No, I think the guy who was Curly got Judd, maybe.
Yeah. They moved people around.
Which is odd. There was the one guy who came back who was like, I miss this so much and I'm going to be a performer again. And then he gets cast as like third guy from the right. And he's clearly upset about it.
Oh, right. And but he's like, well, you know, I'll buck up.
He gets cast as Ike, which is like like Will Parker's sidekick. Basically.
I would say that this is one of the episodes where it starts to turn into, oh, this show's heartwarming rather than.
Yeah. Cause you have,
cause they're quite good. And also you have the guy, what's the part that he plays?
Will.
Oh, Will. Okay. So the guy who played Will Parker originally was a great tap dancer.
Mm-hmm.
In the original production, do they tap dance?
I mean,
it's like a stepping
number.
Step dancing kind of thing. And they show footage and he's great.
Yeah.
And then he got into an accident and is paralyzed from the waist down.
Right. So he's in a wheelchair.
And so they choreographed something for him using the chair and hands and stuff like that. So that was really sweet.
And I like that Ali Stoker from
Oh, yeah. See, that was a great guest
that's
appearance.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's really, really incredible. Like, I'm doing Oklahoma right now. I just won a Tony Award. I'm someone who uses a wheelchair.
Like, I wonder if in season two they can get better... I mean, she's a great guest, but like have her caliber guest in every episode because season two to be like, oh, now we've seen it. We know what we're signing up for.
It's like that NBC show Making It, which I absolutely love.
Yeah.
The first season, the crafters are good. The second season, they're all incredible because it's like, now we know what this is. And now this has been brought to my attention. So now I want to be part of it.
Right. It's a success.
Yeah. I feel like most reality shows, like the quality jumps exponent as the knowledge of that show spreads, the quality of the contestants get better.
Yeah, because the season two of Making It, almost everybody in that could have won season one.
Oh, easily.
What's next?
If you haven't watched that, go back and watch Making It. It's great.
Yeah, great show.
Following episode is Godspell.
Which group is this?
They were from Houston, your hometown.
Oh,
they're from Eisenhower High School.
I can't remember if I remember this group. This they're older too, right?
1998.
Okay.
So they're like a couple years younger than me.
What stood out about this episode?
Honestly, not much. They're all good. They're all really good. It's mostly an African-American cast. They've all got good voices and they're all pretty strong. I don't have...
Oh, this was the Cotton Club version.
No, that's Anything Goes.
Oh.
Isn't it? No. No, you're right.
Because when they did Yes, It's All for the Best, they were in like tuxes and stuff like that.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, this just seemed like a good... crew of people. I don't remember
the only note because I have like little notes that I'd written about each episode. So I have like Oklahoma, Woody is Will Parker, uses a wheelchair, Allie makes appearance, Brad blah 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 didn't get the lead, and you know, mom said, oh, we didn't cover that real quick about the Oklahoma episode, was that the mother who was the drama teacher sent her daughter and the guy playing her boyfriend into a closet and made them make out
high school. Like, in high school.
Like, that's very uncomfortable.
Well, also, the mother, similar to the other lady, is in the show and is bad.
Yeah.
And she messes up a line. And then backstage, the husband sells his daughter out. And it's like, well, she's the one who made the mistake.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you messed up your line.
Yeah. They keep putting the blame on everyone and usually their own daughter, which is horrible.
Yeah.
So the only note I have written for Godspell is most were really good.
Yeah.
So we can move, we can move on from that. Episode after, or Godspell, is Fiddler on the Roof, which is Catella High School from Anaheim. They were from 2001, which is why I think Kristen Bell showed up.
Right, because they're just a short drive.
They're right around the corner.
She has to go do some appearances for Frozen 2 in Anaheim.
Right.
And she stops by.
Going to be out there anyway. So yeah, Fiddler, again, didn't have a whole lot of drama or
and they were pretty good.
Yeah, there was that was the guy with the kind of crazy guy with the long hair who was model.
Yeah. And he's a is he not in a band?
Yeah, he's like a front man for a band now.
Yeah. He was the guy who he's like a larger Weird Al that wears track suits.
Yes.
And I think works in like a record store in LA or something like that. But that was a fun group in general. I that highlighted for me, I still think it's strange when non-Jewish people do Fiddler, especially when they have to do the like, oh, I talk like this. Like, I'm a white suburban. And when it's a kid, you're kind of like, okay, you're in high school. This isn't the most diverse high school, so like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so that model of like, these are the people we have applies, but now they're adults.
And it's a little gross.
It's a little weird.
Yeah.
So Fiddler is a tough one for me for that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're good in general.
Yeah. Next episode was Pippin.
Uh-huh.
That's maybe my favorite episode.
Oh, really?
I think so. As far as like the heartwarmingness and whatnot.
They were very talented.
They were really talented. There was they split the leading player into two people.
Mm-hmm.
And then Carter was the one who was having a hard time with his lines. And he was like the big star of high school and like hadn't performed since. And
This drama teacher was the best.
He was great.
Yeah.
He was really great. And then there's the other guy who had like got shot and his blood pressure spiked and they took him to the hospital. And then suddenly he might not be able to do the show. And the other guy
hadn't learned
his part.
Yeah. Yeah. They were splitting leading player.
Right.
So he'd kind of learned his half of the leading player part. But that was a show. Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like as you get further on in the season, the people are more talented because, there are fewer episodes later where you're like, oh, that guy's just terrible.
Yeah.
Oh wait, no, there is one. Is it in Pippin? The one, the guy who's just not an actor at all. I think it's later.
That's Ragtime.
Okay.
That's Ragtime.
It's Ragtime. Yeah.
He's an EMT driver.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Pippin I thought was great overall. And I remember the woman who played Fastrada was fantastic.
Uh-huh.
It's really cool to see people remembering what they could do.
Yeah.
Or remembering how much they love something. It's heartwarming to me. I like it.
And the, again, that leading player guy has such these expectations on him about, I used to be so good.
Right.
And now, and the teacher's like, there's something you're holding back that you didn't when you were in high school. You know, I think that's interesting.
We know what we need.
What?
We need an exercise where we all go back to our high school selves.
So this is a recurring thing, is that Coy Middlebrook, which it's mostly him directing most of the episodes, or directing the show in most of the episodes, loves to just take people into a studio, have them sit on the ground and, you know, think back about if you could meet your previous self, you know, in high school, what's the advice that you would get? What do you want to tell them? And most of them are just like, you know what? You're going to be okay.
You're good enough.
You know, none of them are like, you should buy Apple stock.
Well, yeah, the girl from High School Musical, she should have been like, hey, duck.
Maybe don't play a very dangerous sport. Softball is a very dangerous sport.
Yeah.
Especially if you're the pitcher. What's next?
High School Musical. There we are.
Yeah, you know, so in terms of the material of the show, I think this is one we related to the least because neither of us really is familiar with High School Musical.
Well, also, it's not a Broadway show.
Right.
Like, I mean, yes, there is a stage version of it that was made after the films.
Yeah.
But it was originally a Disney Channel movie first.
And I think this would only be on the show because we're watching it on Disney Plus.
Sure.
Sure. And also, Disney's launching launched High School Musical.
The series.
Which I hear is great.
Yeah,
I feel like it has one more word in it. High School Musical.
The television
the
series.
The musical, the series, or something like that. It's a very complicated name.
High School Musical, the
yeah.
Musical.
What'd you think about this one?
It was fine. This was one of those ones where a lot of the kids now work at the school.
Uh-huh.
So that kind of element of, and it also, I mean, it was 2007, so it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
So that nostalgic feeling of it isn't necessarily there for them because it's like, well, I'm here in this building every day.
Right. And a lot of them are like, oh my God, I haven't seen you since yesterday.
Right, right.
This is a very small town.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But this is the one where the girl got hit in the face with the softball. Yes.
And so by far the saddest of all.
Because, I mean, she really suffered. But also that's the girl where... that some other girl who was not in the show at all mm-hmm. was like, I really like High School Musical and I know all the lines and songs. And then they just put her in the lead.
Oh,
to replace the girl who got hit in the face. Like she wasn't even in the show. And then suddenly she's the lead.
Right.
So she's back again as well. But she's like, well, really, I really want her to play the part this time. So it's also like, but then what are you here for? Yeah. Like, why are you here?
Who are you again? By the way, that show on Disney Plus is called High School Musical, The Musical, The Series.
Are you serious?
Yes. That's the official name. High School Musical: The Series.
It's a lot of colons. It's
the official name of that show. And that's why I want them to make a movie of that. High School Musical, The Musical, The Series, The Movie. Because the movie will be about a high school putting on the... this show is about a high school putting on the stage musical.
So that show would be a movie about...
A movie version of this show.
Them making this show.
Yeah, and then they can make that into a stage musical. And that will be High School Musical, The Musical, The Series, The Movie, The Musical.
And then you and Amber can start a podcast called High School Musical, The Musical, The Series, The Broadway Show, The Podcast. Yeah.
Or we could... Amber and I could start a podcast called Throwing Ourselves Off a Bridge. Instead of talking about this show. What was next?
What did we just talk about?
We just talked about...
High School Musical.
Yeah.
Next was Anything Goes, where nobody knew their lines.
Yeah, this is my favorite cast, though.
They were really fun.
The oldest cast.
Yeah.
They were very good singers.
Yeah. Their production was from 1975. That's a year before I was born. But
this was one where it's like... then I went and toured singing with the Whispers.
Right.
I sang with... they are really, really good singers.
Mm-hmm.
And they also seemed to have the most fun in the actual show, considering that they didn't know their lines.
Mm-hmm.
And they added a character to the show who had the quote-unquote captain's log on stage all the time lines. And the one guy who just kept... they just seemed to have fun when they would forget the lines.
Yeah.
And the crowd that came to see them... had fun watching it.
We're clear the game. Yeah. That was one thing that made me sad was like in the earlier episodes, like the audience is very clearly full and like people are really supportive, but there are some of these episodes where it's like, oh, there's like six rows of people there.
Yeah.
And the rest of the theater is empty.
Well,
nobody came to see this.
Probably a lot of the people in their high school class are not with us anymore.
Right. 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 Or have, you know, especially when it's that long ago, you know, they've moved or they're elsewhere. Cause that was LA high school. That was Los Angeles high school, from 1975. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And then our final episode
was also LA or Santa Monica, right?
It's Pacific Christian High School from Santa Monica.
Yeah.
Yeah. With your favorite.
Well, this is one of the great additions to my life in 2019 is one of my favorite new artists, Chelsco. And it's given me a great shorthand for the kind of people in Los Angeles that, want a pop influencer career. And honestly, we did this later, but like as an artist and a creator, I want to both nail down what is different about Chelsco, who's, I think her name's Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
One of the students in the so she was in the musical and now is trying to be a pop star called Chelsco. And go watch on YouTube some Chelsco music videos. I think it's a useful exercise to examine what is different about this from like a Dua Lipa video. Like why is this bad and this feels good?
Mm-hmm.
Because on a casual listen, her songs and her video are basically like the same in a way, but they're not. There's a craft level that pop music has that she doesn't have, but it's interesting to try to figure out exactly what it is.
It's hard to pinpoint because she's hitting a lot of the same beats.
Yeah.
And she's hitting a lot of the same imagery. You know, like she's doing it kind of right.
And you could see her looking at the video being like, yes, this is good.
This looks like that.
And so. It is good in a way. It's crafted well. And also, by the way, I don't want to imply that there is a pure meritocracy where like Justin Bieber is genuinely better than everybody else. There's certainly an amount of luck and marketing and randomness. By the way, a year from now, if Chelsea's like on the charts, like it's not that crazy.
Right.
It was like, oh, who's the girl who recorded her own for that Friday?
Rebecca Black. That's exactly what I was thinking of
too. Yeah. You know, that song ended up being a hit for real.
Mm.
And that was something she like recorded at a mall or she got a company that like makes the video for you.
Like her dad hired.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I think a lot of what sets people apart. Like you were saying, you know, you don't think that Justin Bieber is necessarily exponentially better than anybody else. It also comes from having the money and the resources to surround yourself with incredible people who will elevate what you can do already.
Yeah.
So if you've got a great AD, you've got a great director of photography, you've got a great producer for the music, you can manipulate and take what you have and make it better with these surrounding people. So I don't think necessarily, like, if Chelsea happens to, first of all, change her name, because that's awful.
But never change Chelsea.
Because she's a listener, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, if she were to surround herself and get the resources to surround herself with the right people, she could conceivably maybe do something.
Yeah, I mean, that's so it's like, it's interesting to see, like, why is her video not as good as other videos? And also, this is like isn't that a Jewish thing? Why is this video not like other videos? That's something you say at like Rosh Hashanah. No, you say, why is this day not like all the other days?
Oh, yeah.
You know, what are the differences? And also, what are the things, like, if she just sold her song to, you know, a Kardashian reality show, then next year she'd just have her album produced by Mark Ronson and then she's on the charts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if the base level of talent is that different.
Mm.
You know, a lot of it's the execution around it.
That being said, she did fuck up her very first line.
And yes.
Then miss an entrance because
of it. So they're doing ragtime.
Yeah.
And she's playing Houdini.
Which first off, is a little strange to me because it's like you clearly didn't have enough people come back to fill out the actual female singing roles. Why not have her? Like, she's a singer. That's what she's supposed to be doing.
And Houdini's not a singing part.
No.
Houdini's a magic part.
And he's only got like 3 scenes total.
Yeah.
And they're small.
You could have had one of the professionals play Houdini.
Yeah. And let her play, you know, Evelyn Nesbitt or something. Like, not, I mean, Evelyn Nesbitt, the woman who played her, came back. But, like, there are other female roles in that show that I think were probably played by pros who she could have played.
Oh, that was a funny thing Eric would do when we were watching sometimes. It'd be like 4 people singing harmony. And all of a sudden, not necessarily in the ragtime episode, but all of a sudden in one of these episodes, it would sound really good. And you'd be like, oh, there's 3 pro singers. Oh, no wonder they're hitting like this, you know. Of course, those pro people probably thought like, I'm in a show, you know, with Kristen Bell, and maybe this is going to be my break.
Yeah. I'm going to be on Disney Plus.
That is the show with the guy who's not a performer at all.
Yes, he's an EMT.
Yeah, which I thought was fine. Mm-hmm. It didn't bother me at all because he was so far below the level. Like, he knew and everybody knew that he was not good.
Yeah.
And so then it's just like, it's fine. Mm-hmm. It's the ones that where they think they're good and they're not. That's, I think, the problem.
Well, it's like the guy at the end of, I think it was the Oklahoma episode, where he's like, I'm quitting my job and I'm going to pursue acting full time. And it's like, you absolutely should not be doing that.
Yeah.
Please don't do that. You're going to ruin your life. You're too old to be doing that now.
What, was that the episode where the guy was an actor, the kind of good looking guy? And he wanted to be the lead.
Yeah.
But no, I'm talking about, this is a younger guy. It might have been the Wisconsin one. There was a guy who was like, I want to be, he auditioned straight up against somebody else. I think it was High School Musical.
Okay.
And didn't get the part. And he was like, man, that's, it was High School Musical. Because he was like, oh, it's embarrassing because I'm trying to be an actor.
Yes.
And I didn't beat this guy for the role.
Mm-hmm. He's an English teacher or whatever, and I couldn't beat him for that.
But that guy, I think, lives here. And actually, I remember when we were watching that episode, I was like, he's actually got a good look. He probably will book stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And who else was in Ragtime? The Ragtime was pretty good, I thought.
It wasn't bad overall, yeah. I mean, the EMT guy was kind of rough.
Yeah.
And obviously, Chelsea was
the best.
A disaster.
Yeah. I mean, she messes up her line. She's hanging upside down as Houdini. Only has the one line.
And not only does she screw up the line, but she like gasps and covers her mouth.
Yeah.
And like very clearly draws attention to
the fact. Do you remember what the line is or the gist of it?
It's like Harry Houdini made an art of escape. You know, it's...
Yeah, just say whatever. Like, it doesn't... No one... First of all, no one in the audience really knows the details and doesn't care.
Right.
Actually, having seen Ragtime at the Pasadena Playhouse... This show's episode was directed by the woman who directed that production at the Pasadena Playhouse.
She directed the Broadway revival.
But the musical director was from the Pasadena Playhouse.
Yeah, and they do it at the Pasadena Playhouse, don't they?
Did they?
There's one of them that is at the Pasadena Playhouse.
It must have been that one. But having seen Ragtime at the Pasadena Playhouse, that Houdini part is not a thing that the audience would be like, I can't believe she messed that up.
Right.
They should be like, whatever. But instead she draws attention to it by going like, oh... And then gets off and just has a breakdown.
A breakdown that causes her to miss her entrance.
Oh, that's right.
Because she's talking to the crew. Yeah. She's talking to the, I just don't know what happened. And I just froze up. And then she like, you can see the panic in her face. And she runs literally through the opening number to get to her place.
One moment we didn't talk about is, what's the moment that went viral a little bit where the guy, which show was it? Where backstage they were like, John. Like,
Jim, stop. It's Oklahoma.
Okay.
One of the guys is like, they really love us. And his mic is still on. And the other, one of the other guys is like, Jim, stop. Lin-Manuel Miranda tweeted just that.
Just
Jim, stop with a clip of it. Because he was like, this is now part of my everyday vocabulary.
So I would say we're probably excited for a season two.
I hope it happens. I really want to try to track down the Into the Woods episode. That was the original pilot from like 3 years ago.
Right.
I really would love to see that.
Cause it was supposed to be an NBC show originally.
Yeah. I'm glad Disney Plus picked it up.
Yeah. I think it's a great show. I can't imagine it's that expensive to produce. Mm-mm. I don't know. And I feel like similar to what you said, I bet, you're going to have a lot of schools submit themselves for this second time around. So I bet we're going to see, I would honestly bet you're probably going to see just better casts. And in that way, season two might not be as fun. Like, cause you kind of want to see train wrecks.
Yeah. I'm hoping they don't.
I just hope there's some real like people that just think they're amazing and they're terrible.
Yeah. So real quick, just to kind of wrap out this episode, if your high school was getting selected, which production that you were in high school would you be most
that's
happy?
What's hard is our high school is we only did senior musicals. So you only one. Yeah.
Oh.
So our only choice would be Pippin, which they've already done and which I hate. but actually there's nothing about the construction of the show that means they have to do high schools because they could do colleges.
That's true.
They never say like we're only doing high schools. Mm-hmm. So and in fact I wouldn't be surprised if they expanded it to that. Or even expanded it to this community college, community theater performance of whatever. Mm-hmm. Because if it gets you an interesting story, it gets you an interesting story.
Right. No one really cares about the original production.
Although my college too, you can only be in the musical if you're a senior. So that was Assassin.
That's wow.
Yeah. So the only two you could do from the schools that I went to would be Pippin or Assassins. Now you could do other years from my school. Like the year before was Guys and Dolls and stuff, but I mean, Assassins from college would be interesting.
You were Gitto?
Yeah, I was Gitto, and my friend Missy Pyle was Squeaky from.
Oh, really?
She's singing "I'm Unworthy of Your Love."
Yeah,
yeah. So, you know, it'd be an interesting cast to reunite.
Yeah,
assuming that we are not all incarcerated by the time this rolls around, which is the chances are not good on that one.
Chris isn't going to jail. I just
not me.
Neither is Missy.
Yeah, neither is Missy.
Well, that we know of.
So yeah, I'm trying to think of other shows that which show would you pick?
That's the interesting thing. Like, because I went to a performing arts high school, a lot of people who have come out of my high school have had pretty decent careers.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting in that getting those people back together again.
I think that they could, so like a UK Christmas, like they do Christmas episodes, like Downton Abbey had a Christmas episode. Mm-hmm. You know, The Office had a Christmas episode. Mm-hmm. And they're often connected to like, a lot of their holiday programming is connected to like charity. Mm-hmm. If there was a charity or like public service episode of Encore, then I think that your high school could do one of those shows and they could justify the price of getting all those people involved.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee that that episode would cost as much as like the entire first season of Encore.
To get those people.
Yeah. Unless they were like, hey, we're also doing a fundraising thing, donate. Like, we're going to actually put together a live performance of, I forget what was one of the ones that everybody was in.
Guys and Dolls, probably.
Guys and Dolls. Who was Fonzie in that?
He was Benny South Street.
Okay.
So Fonzie Rodriguez, who's now known as Luis Fonzie, who sang Despacito,
yeah,
was Benny South Street. I was Nicely, so we sang the title song together.
Uh-huh.
But then Joey Fatone from NSYNC was in our ensemble, uh-huh, and like there were several kind of people like that.
We had
Musketeers.
It would also... So, yeah, what I mean is I think it would need to almost be like a very special episode of, because
yeah,
I think that in some level... There'd be the novelty of like, oh, these are celebrities in this show. But then there would also be the like, it's not as interesting because like, you know.
They're good.
Fonzie's like a performer touring all the time and he's just doing this. And then it depends on how sort of raw they'd be willing to go to compare like his feelings versus people, other people in that cast that were, quote, supposed to be stars that aren't,
mm-hmm,
and whether or not those people would want to participate.
Right. I also think it would be interesting to see, again, someone like Joey or Fonzie, where they're very specifically doing something else now. Joey's done some theater. Like, Joey's done quite a bit of theater since then.
Yeah.
But I think Fonzie's done mostly just music.
Right.
So it would be interesting to see him struggling to like remember choreography or to get his lines down. Like it would be, I think, humanizing to be like, oh, like this guy's a huge star or this guy's, you know, a big pop star, but like he still goes through the same things that I do when I have to do a show.
Right.
That might be an interesting angle on it
too. I also think that I don't think people really know Fonzie, like in right, terms of his, I don't know what his personality is at all.
Oh yeah.
So his public persona, I don't think is, I think people know Joey Fatone's,
yeah,
like vibe.
I think people here don't necessarily, or English speaking people here don't know Fonzie's personality. He's very big in the Latin community, and has been for years. Like I remember his wedding like 10 years ago was like on the cover of People en Español.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's definitely known better in that.
Yeah.
In that group. But I think it would be interesting to like bring him to a broader audience that way as well.
I want to also give a shout out since we're talking about Assassins. I just saw yesterday a posting for the East West Players.
Oh.
Is doing Assassins.
Oh.
Starting March 12th, 2020. I almost wish I had auditioned for this.
I wish you had too.
But I don't have an agent that deals with theater. So my agent's TV and film only, so I never even heard about this. But guess who's playing Charles Guiteau?
Who?
Getty Watanabe.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun.
Who else is in it? Anybody else fun?
Who's Max Torres? I feel like I know him. He's the proprietor.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy who sells the guns at the beginning, mm-hmm, or something.
Hey, pal, feeling blue. Don't know what to do. Hey, pal. Bobby. We have to do this at some point because he just did the exact thing that I want to do. I'm going to put Chris in front of a camera and I'm going to say, hey, you know this show, right? Sing that song, because he will invariably be like, the minute you walked in the place, I could see, ba-da-dee-doo, you're a guy.
I know that now, though. The minute you walked through the joint.
Already wrong.
I can tell you were a big pretender. No, wait. The minute you walked in the through the door? No, when you walked in the place, the minute you walked in the joint,
yeah,
I could tell you were a man of distinction, a real big spender,
mm-hmm,
real big spender, good looking, so refined. Wouldn't you like to know what's going on in my mind? Right?
Kind of.
Hey, pal, feeling blue. And they are doing Balladeer / Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh, okay.
Is that's a new invention?
That's the Neil Patrick Harris version.
Hmm. Well, might be interesting to see.
But Getty Watanabe is the only person of note?
Yes. Oh. All seems like a 99% Asian cast, which I would assume is what East West Players is about.
Yeah.
Well,
we should go see it.
Yeah.
And we can talk about it on here.
Yeah. And then the only thing else I wanted to announce was that, so we got next week, Quick and Funny Musicals. Okay, Boomer.
On Thursday at 8:30.
UCB Sunset. And then Friday and Saturday, Dear Jerry Seinfeld at Rockwell, you're in. And then, wait, how do I do this?
You also, you have magic to do on Thursdays at 7 p.m. at UCB Sunset, which is musical improv,
yes,
which is great. Go check it out.
Just vamp for a second while I look this last thing up.
So, also, well, while I'm vamping to talk about this, I do want to mention an email that we got from one of our listeners, which is always nice, and feel free to please email us. But I got an email from Matt Goldstein talking about a production of Peter Pan in Saudi Arabia. Mm. It's the first American musical that has opened over there, and he just sent me some information on it, and so I'm going to put that a link to that on the Twitter page.
Cool.
But yeah, it's just really interesting. He's talking about how, like, culturally the changes they had to make and, like, the adaptive, you know, just it's really interesting to take a look at. It's the first time an American musical has been played over there.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
The thing I want to announce was Monday, March 9th at 8 p.m. at UCB Sunset. I don't know if it's 100% confirmed, but I've been asked to be in a show it's a crossover show between the UCB and Book of Mormon, which is touring here at the Amundsen currently. So it's going to be two parts. The first group, so both parts are going to be a game show about musical theater trivia, I think, and then an improv, musical improv. The first one is, okay, so let me explain. Act one is ex-Mormons versus Mormons, game show, and then improv mashup. Act two is musical theater nerds versus musical theater professionals, and then game show and musical improv. So I've been asked to be part of that part.
Fun.
I actually don't know what all this means, but anyway, it's a Monday night, which means some of the touring cast from Book of Mormon will be in this show.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's Monday when and where?
March 9th at 8 p.m. at UCB Sunset. Just getting it out. We'll announce it again.
Get your tickets.
Cool. I think that's it. So we'll probably see some theater in the next week or so. And yeah, send us an email at the shows you've been seeing in your local area.
Yeah, well, we'd love to hear your stories.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things we're trying to do is create like a way to have conversations about theater that are, you know, about Broadway, but also all the theater that's happening in the US and the world that's not Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to connect people in a sort of mass medium way in a medium that is not for the masses.
Right.
So please send us an email.
Great.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.